By special arrangement with the National Broadcasting Company, K Jewelers' ultra-modern new store at 410 West 7th in downtown Los Angeles brings you news of the world. Immediately following this brief reminder for Southland shoppers.
It's okay till payday. Your promise to pay is okay with K. For gifts, for watches, for diamond rings.
Come in and see all the wonderful things.
Don't delay, come today. Shop the friendly OK way. It's okay to OK till payday. Your credit is okay with K.
Choose from K Jewelers' exceptional selection of nationally known merchandise, including famous names in silverware, electrical appliances, clocks, cameras, portable typewriters, glamorous jewelry, and sparkling K-bonded diamonds. Same moderate prices whether you use cash or credit at K Jewelers, a 32-year-old coast-to-coast organization. 73rd new store at 410 West 7th, between Hill and Olive in downtown Los Angeles. Now Morgan Beatty, News of the World.
The CIO launched another trial rocket tonight, aimed in the direction of a 25% wage rise for auto workers. Industry spokesmen have replied in advance that they might as well shoot for the moon. The automobile workers, nevertheless, will ask for a 23.5% increase, in addition to demands for Social Security, retirement, and equalization funds. In Washington today, John Lewis and his miners asked the Supreme Court several questions to support their appeal from fines for contempt of court. They include, of course, the $64 query. Did the lower court have the right, the authority, to issue an injunction when the Norris-LaGuardia law specifically denies jurisdiction? And President Truman today carried out the promised dismantling of the government's vast wartime machinery. He crammed four alphabetical organizations into one new one. OPA, CPA, OWMR, and OES now turn into an outfit known as OTC, the Office of Temporary Controls. He named General Philip B. Fleming the head of the new setup, with orders to scrap the wartime alphabet entirely. Dr. John R. Steelman also was named as an assistant to the president to help with that and other reorganizations. The Senate War Investigating Committee opened another Bilbo hearing today in Washington, a quest for the facts behind charges that war contractors have made presents to the Mississippi senator, presents worth about $30,000 plus. It all started quietly, with a War Department witness testifying. The senator, he said, beat a fairly constant path to the Pentagon during the war, hunting for contracts for Mississippians. The hearing wound up late today with a dash across country, a hunt for a missing key witness, one Edward P. Terry, the former secretary to Mr. Bilbo. Senate War Committee counsel said Mr. Terry reported that his life had been threatened. Then he disappeared. He has not yet been found, and he's supposed to be en route from New York to Meridian, Mississippi. For the first stop on our world tour tonight, for the astounding comeback staged by an aging French politician, a socialist, by the way, who dominated the headlines a generation at least ago and for a long time afterwards. But now, Henry Cassidy in Paris.
The 74-year-old socialist Léon Blum, who was premier of France before the war, has been called back to save this country from its worst post-war crisis. He was elected premier almost unanimously this afternoon by the National Assembly, and tonight he began his efforts to form a cabinet. He talked with the communist leader Torres, the radical socialist Ariel, the popular Republican Vito, and then, feeling tired, he left Paris to spend the night in the suburbs. Most observers believe he will be able to form a government by the middle of next week. For all his years, Mr. Blum is still an active and vigorous statesman. I had lunch with him after he returned from arranging the French loan in Washington last spring, and he was enthusiastic about the reception he had in the United States. I was his guest last Sunday at a reception he gave for delegates to the UNESCO conference of which he was chairman, and although he sat down during gaps in the receiving line, he sprang to his feet whenever a new guest arrived. He said tonight he's thinking not of the sacrifice imposed on him, but of the honor paid to him by naming him premier at this critical time. The cabinet of George Beda, which resigned 2 weeks ago and is still awaiting the new government, decided this morning to cut railroad service, close non-essential factories, and black out public lighting because of a coal shortage and a general economic crisis. The Blum cabinet will last only a few weeks until a permanent president can be chosen, but those are important weeks for the new Fourth French Republic. Henry Cassidy in Paris.
It's nearly 2 years since the guns died down in mid-Europe. It's taken nearly that long to make a start toward peaceful pursuits, toward picking a permanent home for the United Nations. W.W. Chaplin reports on that later. But first to John McVane at United Nations, Flushing, Long Island.
The United Nations today has been as busy as a one-man band. The full session of the General Assembly has been playing on a proposal to withdraw all ambassadors and ministers of the United Nations from Franco, Spain. Potent Security Council, right hand of the UN, has voted to recommend a new member, Siam. It's been thumping away at a complaint by the monarchist government of Greece that Bulgaria, Albania, and Yugoslavia are helping Greek guerrilla forces and trying to snatch away a section of Greece. Greece was asking for a UN investigation. Suddenly, the Yugoslav delegate told the council he too wanted a UN investigation of the situation to find out just who was telling the truth. Meanwhile, the head of the United Nations has been playing an entirely different tune, the most important of the day. President Spark of the Assembly has been guiding a subcommittee that voted unanimously to recommend far-reaching disarmament measures. The scheme will surely be passed by the full Assembly, and it's something of which the nations can be proud. It recommends practical steps to disarm the world, control the horror of atom and other, perhaps newer, scientific weapons, and make sure no country can beat the rules. But this one-man band still has no home in which it can play, at least not a permanent home. Here at this moment, the headquarters committee is deciding whether or not to accept the Rockefeller offer of a site in Midtown Manhattan. Decision may come at any moment, and the chances look good. But for more news of that site, this is John McVane at the United Nations sending you to W.W. Chaplin in Midtown Manhattan.
I am speaking to you from the newly proposed site for the United Nations. It's a drab and odorous region now, but potentially one of the most beautiful in New York. We're right on the East River, First Avenue. At present, this plot the Rockefellers have offered the United Nations is occupied by sheep and cattle slaughterhouses, cheap tenements, garages, laundries. This is the home of the dead-end kids. I'm in an office of the Wilson Meatpacking Firm on the corner of First Avenue and 46th. Perhaps you can hear the traffic. Chiefly heavy-duty trucks. This is a sordid leftover from the old slum days of this now largely fashionable East Side. Historic East Side, too. On the wall, just outside the window of this meat plant, is a little plaque which tells that on this spot in 1776, Captain Nathan Hale was executed because of his behind-the-British-lines work for General Washington. Here Hale said, "I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country." Here also, Washington staged the first great amphibious operation, bringing in one night some 30,000 troops across the river after the losing battle of Brooklyn to defend Manhattan. This dingy but storied region is now offered to the United Nations as a to-be-built skyscraper headquarters. They may accept it within a matter of minutes. This is W.W. Chaplin at the proposed United Nations site.
There's another scene in Manhattan tonight, a scene that portrays a sudden and tragic interruption of everyday life. A News of the World reporter is there, too. Now here's Bob Denton in Uptown Manhattan.
Tragedy occurred 19 hours ago in a crowded tenement section in the upper reaches of Manhattan Island on 185th Street and Amsterdam Avenue. Fire gutted a six-story abandoned ice house, and one of its massive brick walls crashed upon a tenement apartment housing 22 families, 92 persons. 33 persons are believed still trapped under the vast pile of brick and twisted steel. And now, hours after the fire and crash took place, some 200 police, firemen, and rescue workers are still digging this two-story pile of debris for the trapped bodies. 9 bodies have been recovered so far. 3 of them were just brought out now. And I'm speaking to you from just across the street from the crushed apartment. It is feared now that the front wall may topple. If so, it would drop on the debris where the rescuers are working. In the now barren area behind this wall where the rescue work is going on, 2 large cranes are scooping up the crumbled remains. New York City's crack emergency squad is at work with pneumatic drills cutting up large brick segments of the fallen wall for the big shovels. And they're working under powerful searchlights which not only illuminate the death pile, but the remaining portion of the 6-story tenement where you can see the gaping interiors of the apartments. And when that brick wall fell, it cut through the apartment house, crushing one half of it with 92 occupants. And up to a few minutes ago, one of those men was still alive, could still be heard groaning, and still is, and they expect to bring him out any minute. While the rescue work goes on, relief groups bring the men hot coffee and sandwiches, and a moment ago, one of the police working in a pneumatic drill paused, tilted back his hard brown crash hat, and scanned a newspaper headline telling of the disaster. This is Bob Denton in Uptown Manhattan.
Once in a while, ladies and gentlemen, an editorial comes along, an editorial that's news. Tonight's editorial was not produced by an editor. It was written to an editor by one of you. It comes in a significant hour. Today, 19 months after the Holocaust, the minor peace treaties for Europe were approved in New York. Major settlements are yet to come. The scars of war remain, will remain for years to come. Thus, we face the second so-called peacetime Christmas and New Year. So tonight, we give you the timely substance of a letter from a blind soldier to the Indianapolis News, or rather, to Santa Claus, care of the News. He says, "Dear Santa, if God chooses, let me find beneath my Christmas tree two bright, shiny blue eyes. Let me look out through the window at the snow lying deep and crisp and even. Let me drink in the joys on the faces of those who love me. Let me see all these things so that the memory of the last Christmas I saw, the filthy, smelly mud of battle, might be blotted forever from my mind. But if on Christmas morn I should not find the gift I want, I won't really mind. And I still will be grateful, for haven't I still a good mind, a strong body, friends who love me? Aren't these things important?" Yes, we say, these things are important to Corporal Chester R. Perkins, the author of that letter, because the doctors asked the corporal long ago whether he wanted it straight. He said yes. "Well, soldier," they replied, "you'll never see again." There, ladies and gentlemen, is an editorial by a man who wants a job as a journalist on a paper he knows, the Indianapolis News. There also is today's evidence that we, too, will have to take it straight. Peace is not magic. It will not come in a twinkling. Yet, with the corporal, we have hope. And we can live with hope, along with death and taxes and tax in our shoes. And that's what happened in a few strokes on the scroll of history today.
Local news briefs in just a moment. But first, a message from K Jewelers. About this time of year, there are just two kinds of people. Those who have and those who have not finished their Christmas shopping. In which group are you? Most of us have one or several names left on our list. Whether you're looking for a charming little remembrance or an impressive gift, you'll have a brilliant variety to choose from at K Jewelers. Coast-to-coast buying power of 73 stores means moderate prices on every type of merchandise from glamorous jewelry to nationally known electrical appliances and radios. K Jewelers have all the watches by such famous makers as Elgin, Gruen, Paul Breguet, Fairfax, Longines, Hamilton, Benrus, and Bulova. Take as long as a year to pay, same price as if you used cash. No carrying charges. Shop today at K Jewelers' spacious ultra-modern store, 410 West 7th, between Hill and Olive in downtown Los Angeles. Other K Jewelers stores to serve the Southland in Long Beach, Burbank, and San Diego. Now, local news briefs. The delivery of 1947 license plates to California motorists will be delayed because of the steel shortage. But Motor Vehicle Department officials say 1946 plates will be good until new ones are received. Car owners will receive a receipt which includes the numbers of their new licenses when they pay their fees. Registrations will begin on January 2nd. A bill will be introduced in the legislature next month to double the present 3-cent state gasoline tax. The program will be offered in a measure written by State Senator Randolph Collier of Yreka. Collier says the increase is necessary to finance highway improvements. The weather forecast for Southern California: variable high cloudiness tonight and Friday, with local night and morning fog near the coast. Little change in temperature. Every Tuesday and Thursday at 4:15, K Jewelers present News of the World. Tune to KFI Daily Monday through Friday at 10:30 a.m., for the mid-morning news, a service of K Jewelers' newest store, the 73rd in a great coast-to-coast organization, 410 West 7th Street, between Hill and Olive in downtown Los Angeles.
It's okay till payday. Your credit is okay with K.
Okay.
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 Okay.